Parents be warned, this message may contain content which is unsuitable for younger listeners. Your discretion is advised.
This week, we will continue the story of Samson in what is probably the most famous part of his life. Herein, we will see an example of the great strength for which Samson was so well known, and also of the one weakness which proved to be his downfall. That weakness was his soft spot for women. And that caused him to reveal the secret of his strength. And having revealed the secret of his strength, he fell into the hands of Philistia. If you have not yet read the passage, it is Judges chapter 16, and my recommendation is that you pause and read it now. Today's passage opens ominously with the words, "Samson went to Gaza," and that in itself seems like a pretty terrible idea. Gaza was one of the capital cities of Philistia. Samson was an outlaw to the Philistines. We would think that going to Gaza for any reason would be a bad idea for Samson. Why was he there? Well, he may have gone there for the purpose of finding a prostitute. Prostitution, I would hope, was less common among the people of Israel, so maybe he was looking for a prostitute and going into Philistine territory was the only way to get one. Whether or not finding a prostitute was his intent, he did find a prostitute while there, and he went into her. And I would say that is the Hebrew euphemism for sexual intercourse, but then, sexual intercourse, it seems, is probably the more euphemistic term, and he went into her is the more descriptive. Now, we can understand in some sense why Samson did what he did here. He had lost his wife, and that without even consummating. That is a lamentable state for anyone to be in. I'm sure that Samson had unfulfilled sexual desires and that the temptation to fornication was thereby particularly strong for him. However, that does not justify the action. We have discussed the problems with prostitution in the past. See our message, Fornication, published April 1st of 2018 for more on that. In this case, Samson is very much an example of what not to do. As I have mentioned several times throughout the book of Judges, we have here an accurate description of what happened, but not a prescription for what should have happened. In fact, this is another example of Samson's great weakness. He had a weak spot for women, and this weakness would create an opening for Philistia that would ultimately lead to his downfall. That downfall would not come in this particular instance, however, it would come in a later story. Here, the men of Gaza found out that Samson was in the city, and so they set an ambush for Samson at the city gate. The plan was to keep the city gates closed, even after daylight, and to ensure that when Samson tried to leave, they could catch him. It's a little like in modern times when federal agents will catch a fugitive at the airport while he's trying to skip the country. They know he's trying to leave, and so they are watching the points of exit. But Samson got the better of the Philistines in this instance. He finished his business and left at midnight, not waiting until morning as expected. Thus, he caught the Philistines unprepared, and when they tried to block him in with the gates, he just pulled the gates up and took them with him. And that, if it is not already obvious, is a feat of extraordinary strength. I have a report, which I will link in the library, from Dr. William D. Barrick, formerly of the Bible Baptist College and Seminary of Denver, Colorado, who gave some speculation as to what these gates might have been like based on excavations of similar cities around the same time. His belief is that the gates would have been about 3 meters or 10 feet wide, large enough to accommodate traffic flow into and out of a major ancient city. And they would have been high enough and thick enough to keep out invading armies, about 10 feet in height. Such gates would be constructed of thick wood to withstand battering rams and then plated with bronze so that they couldn't be burned. To keep the gates closed, there would have been a heavy wooden or metal bar running across the gate and into the city walls. The passage describes that when Samson took the gates, the bar came with them. Dr. Barrick calculated that the gates, even without the metal plating and bars, may have weighed as much as 10,700 pounds, or 4,850 kilograms for my friends across the pond. He speculated that the minimum weight of such gates would have been about 5,350 pounds, or 2,400 kilograms. With the metal plating and bars, the weight could have gone as high as 10 tons. For comparison, the modern world record for the most powerful squat in competitive weightlifting is only 1,306 pounds, or 592.3 kilograms. So if we accept Dr. Barrick's minimum number, this lift was 4 times higher than anything ever recorded since. His maximum number might have been 16 times that. And as if that wasn't enough, he didn't just pick these gates up. He ripped them loose from their footings, and then he carried them away. Now, some people are going to tell you that he carried the gates all the way to Hebron, which was uphill about 38 miles. But what the passage actually says is that he carried them, quote, to the top of a hill that is in front of, or before, Hebron, end quote. So, in my mind, that could mean that he walked uphill until he got to Hebron and then dropped them, or that he started in the direction of Hebron and dropped the gates off on the first hilltop he came to. I don't deny at all that he could have brought the gates to Hebron. I mean, this is obviously a miracle. Samson had been granted some incredible strength. God made the universe. The planets float around it as if weightless. God is strong enough to lift anything and carry it anywhere, and really, that's what we're talking about here. Even making a comparison to human ability is unreasonable because Samson was really just a vessel through whom God worked. So, of course, God could have carried the gates to Hebron using Samson. I mean, goodness, once we've suspended our disbelief to accept a person lifting 5 tons of weight, there's really no reason to not go all the way and accept carrying the gates to Hebron. But he may have not really gone all that far. So let's put this into context with the rest of the story, because there is a point to all this. Samson had beaten the Philistines badly in the past, but with this, they came to realize that there really was nothing natural that could be done to stop him. I mean, killing a lion is one thing, killing 1,000 men is another, but lifting several tons and carrying them uphill is just beyond anything that these guys can handle. And they had the home field advantage here and everything. The Philistines realized at this point that there was a secret to the strength, and they realized that there was nothing they could do about it until they had uncovered the secret, and thus the rest of the passage. They decided to uncover the secret by using a little human intelligence to get it out of him, and in Samson's predilection for prostitution, they found their point of entry, a weakness for women. So they selected a spy, a woman named Delilah. Delilah was a woman from the Valley of Sorek. The Valley of Sorek ran right past Samson's hometown area between Zorah and Eshtaol, so likely the idea here is that this was a girl from his area, not traditionally Philistine territory. The passage does not specify whether she had already been an acquaintance of Samson's or if she had to gain his trust after the Philistines approached her. My guess, based on the telling of the story, is that she was some kind of live-in girlfriend, a term which makes me cringe a little to say it. The passage also doesn't tell us clearly whether she was an Israelite or an occupying Philistine, but my guess is that, with the way she was always saying the Philistines are upon you, she must have been an Israelite. But whomever she had been, and whatever had been her relationship to Samson, the Philistines approached her and offered her money to get Samson's secret out of him. They offered her 1,100 pieces of silver to do this. It is usually my practice to convert numbers like that into modern monetary units to give my audience an idea of how much this was, but unfortunately we don't have any mention of the weights of the pieces of silver, so we really can't know. My guess, though, is that we're talking about something comparable to a shekel, and if that is the case, we might be looking at about 12,000 modern paper dollars here. But that presumes also that the Philistine lords were going to give her 1,100 pieces of silver collectively. The language of the passage seems to suggest that each of them were offering to give her 1,100 pieces of silver individually. In that case, presuming that we're only talking about the 5 lords of the Philistines, that is, the rulers of Gath, Gaza, Ashdod, Ashkelon, and Ekron, they were offering 5,500 pieces of silver. That would be worth about 60,000 paper dollars. That's about 1.5 to 2 years' wages for an ordinary American worker, so we're not talking about chump change here. On a quibbling point, the ESV uses the word seduce to describe what the Philistines told Delilah to do to Samson, but I don't think that's quite accurate. Seduce tends to describe a sexual enticement, but that wasn't necessarily the request, even if it might be implied. The word more accurately might be to flatter him or to make him stupid, so that he would give up the secret. How she did it didn't necessarily matter to them. And so in verse 6, we begin a little tension building in the narrative. We have 3 cycles in which Delilah asks Samson to reveal his secret, and he gave a false answer. We have three cycles in which Delilah asked Samson to reveal his secret, and he gave a false answer. On the fourth cycle, he finally told the true secret. So in the first cycle, Delilah asks him how... So in the first cycle, Delilah asked him how he could be bound, and Samson dishonestly said that he could be bound by 7 fresh bowstrings that had not been dried. Bowstrings at the time would have likely been made in one of two ways, either using fibrous plant materials like flax or hemp, or using animal gut and hide. The latter, using animal parts, must be what is in focus here because plant fibers wouldn't go through a drying process, so far as I know. An animal bowstring, then, would be made by either slicing the skin of an animal into thin strips, braiding the strips together for strength, and then allowing them to dry, or by taking the intestine of an animal, stretching it out, and then braiding it together and allowing it to dry. Being tied up with these undried bowstrings would be, from my modern perspective, just a little bit gross. And I must say, if the question about the secret of Samson's strength was asked so bluntly as the passage suggests, I'm surprised that Samson gave Delilah any answer at all. I would have answered something like, "Mind your own business." And it is also strange, if the matter was as simple as what is recorded in the passage, that Samson then allowed Delilah to tie him up with fresh bowstrings. I mean, that's pretty weird. My guess is that this was all part of some kind of sexual game. Maybe Delilah told Samson that she liked the idea of tying him up before sex and used that to ask him how she could do it. Or maybe she was just withholding sex until he was bound. She might have said, "Hey, you're too big and strong and I don't want you to hurt me, so I'm not going to do anything until you're tied up." Of course, that is all speculative, but given the context, it seems to be the most sensible possibility. However she did it, though, she did it, and when she did it, she had the Philistines hiding in the house to burst out and capture Samson. Obviously, when the Philistines burst out, their plan didn't work. Samson snapped the bowstrings and escaped. And I'm guessing that he killed the Philistines in the ambush, but I don't know that for certain either. Maybe they just saw him unbound and ran off. Now, if I was Samson, I would have been asking some very serious questions of Delilah at that point. Questions like, "What are the odds of Philistines attacking as soon as you tie me up?" And, "How did they get into your bedroom?" But I suppose she must have convinced him that it was only coincidence and that the Philistines had crawled in a window or something. In verses 10 through 12, the cycle repeats again. Delilah played offended at the fact that Samson had deceived her and demanded the real secret. Samson lied again, this time saying that he would need to be bound with new ropes. Of course, we as readers already know that that won't work. He had been bound with new ropes at Lehi and had still been able to break free. But Delilah didn't know that, and so she tied him up, and then, just as, I speculate, Samson was about to get the sexual satisfaction he so craved, out popped the Philistines. Samson broke the ropes and fended them off. You know what they say? Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. So shame on Samson for getting to this point. I would have thought that here, surely Samson would have quit hanging around Delilah and telling her secrets. But then, there wasn't any hard evidence that Delilah had told the Philistines Samson's secret, or that she had told the Philistines to come. The case was circumstantial. Maybe it just so happened that whenever Samson was bound, the Philistines would show up. But I guess Delilah convinced Samson that it was, again, just an unlikely coincidence. Or maybe she told him that the Philistines were just keeping a close watch on him, such that they were able to guess when he would be tied up. Who knows? The cycle repeats itself yet again in verses 13 and 14. Delilah played offended, and Samson gave a new answer, this time that his strength would leave him if his hair was woven into a loom. Now, it seems to me that the passage is a little more specific about just how this was done. It references specific parts of the loom, like the web and the pin. I personally don't have enough experience with a loom to comment on exactly how this was done. The idea seems to be that if Samson's hair was made into a cloth, he would become weak. I'm not one to settle, though, for not knowing the scriptures inside and out, though, so I would like to see someone who really knows how this works to give me a demonstration. So I'm going to issue a call to any hobby cloth makers out there. If you've got an ancient-styled loom and you can make me a video of how Samson's hair would have been bound up in it, I would love to see it. We note that this time Samson didn't let Delilah do this to him. Previously, he had been letting her tie him up, but I guess he noticed the pattern with the Philistines and decided not to play these silly games with her anymore. Instead, in the night, while he was sleeping, Delilah trapped his hair in the loom. And then she shouted at him that the Philistines were upon him, and he woke up and pulled his hair free. We note also here that the passage doesn't explicitly say that the Philistines were actually there. It just says in this instance that she woke Samson up by shouting that they were there. Maybe she had decided to test him herself before setting up an ambush this time. If in fact the Philistines weren't there, that might help Delilah's credibility, because I'd think that after Samson didn't consent to being bound, and he awoke to find himself bound with the Philistines upon him, it would have been game over for Delilah. Otherwise, she might actually plead that this was just some kind of sexual game, and look, the Philistines don't show up every time you're bound. I'm guessing, though, just guessing, that the situation went something like this. That Samson woke up, pulled his hair free, and said, "What in the world is wrong with you?" And she said, "Oh, well, I'm just playing a little joke. I wanted to see if it works." Something like that. And then Samson would have been tired. It would have been late at night. He had been suddenly awakened, and then he had Delilah nagging him again. It was, "You're always mocking me, and you don't really love me, and you're always lying to me." At that point, Samson's wits were not with him, and he would probably do anything to just salvage his relationship and get back to bed. But he held firm, at least for that moment. After that, though, the nagging just went on day after day after day after day. I can imagine that eventually this became a major annoyance and a serious hindrance to Samson's relationship, which I suppose was already struggling under a lack of mutual trust. How long this went on was unclear, but eventually Samson gave up the secret. In verse 17, Samson told her the truth. His hair had never been cut because of his Nazarite vow. God was with him because of the vow. If the hair was cut, the vow would be broken, and the strength would leave him. And there are some questions to attend to this as well. Questions like, if Samson's hair had never been cut, how did he know that cutting it would take his strength away? Or, if this is all about the Nazarite vow, then why not get him drunk with wine, which would also break the vow? We don't know, because the passage doesn't tell us. What it does tell us is that Delilah could tell this time that he was telling the truth. She summoned the Philistines, and they came with money in hand, certain that this time they would have him. So Samson fell asleep in her lap, and Delilah called in a man, evidently a servant, who cut off Samson's hair. And as went the hair, so went the strength. And then Delilah cried out again, "The Philistines are upon you!" Samson woke up, expecting to easily win another fight, and was dismayed to find that the spirit of Jehovah, and thus his strength, had left him. Samson was seized by the Philistines. And since we are already running longer than average on time, I will reserve further comments on this passage for next week, so that we can give them their due attention. And we will plan to conclude Samson's story in 2 weeks' time. To end today, then, Samson had been a great hero for Israel, having defeated the Philistines and set up an independent judiciary, but he was not invincible. He demonstrated to the Philistines in the matter of the gate at Gaza that his strength could not be bested by any normal means, but he also revealed the weakness that would ultimately unlock his secret. He had a soft spot for women. And so the Philistines used a woman of his homeland to tease the secret out of him. Samson resisted her for a long time with fake methods for uncovering his strength, but ultimately, he cracked and revealed his secret. The secret key to his strength was his hair, the symbol of his Nazarite vow. Delilah, greedy for an unjust bounty, had the hair cut, and the Philistines captured Samson. We will continue with more on this story next week.
For those of you who are listening to this message away from your computer and are looking for more like it, you can find us at eastjordan.church.